A Prayer for the Ship, written by Douglas Riemann and read by David Rintoul.
Chapter 1. The whole of the naval anchorage seemed subdued and cowed by the relentless, sleety rain which drove across the estuary, whipping the grey waves into a turbulent, white-capped frenzy. As the wind moaned through the mean little streets around the port and swept the soaking jetties, the various ships of war strained and tugged at their cables and wires, while huddled figures in glistening oilskins sought cover and protection behind the gun shields of flapping canvas dodgers. Across and beyond the boom gate, a few barrage balloons plunged and staggered like drunken whales as their cursing crews somewhere in the muddy fields fought with the creaking moorings. The sea itself looked even greyer than usual, and it was difficult to discern the break with the racing clouds which was the horizon, where a lone trawler fought into the teeth of the gale, 1 minute hidden by the steep, jagged waves, and the next instant showing her streaming keel, more concerned with staying afloat than listening for a prowling U-boat. The tall, rust-streaked sides of the Coastal Forces depot ship Royston shuddered as the gale punched her, but she remained the steadiest vessel in the harbour, her cables fore and aft stretched bar taut, and her deck planking patterned with little humps of blown salt. Her charges, motor torpedo boats and motor gunboats, were strung in uncomfortable trios around her, banging and lurching together, rope fenders and old motor tyres doing their best to ease the jolting motion. Up on the main deck, the quartermaster peered out towards the railway wharf and cursed unsympathetically the ship's motorboat, which had just left the shelter of the wall and was bounding over the stream towards him. He saw the coxswain lift his hand in a half-hearted sign and then withdraw into the tiny wheelhouse. The quartermaster turned to the other figure sharing his vigil, the officer of the day, who was endeavouring to read a signal, already soggy with rain, in the shelter of his oilskin.
"Motorboat returning, sir!" he yelled. "One officer aboard!"
Lieutenant Pike waved the tattered signal in acknowledgement. "Turn out the duty watch. I'm going to bring the boat aboard. No more trips today." As the quartermaster pulled out his silver call and switched on the tannoy microphone, Pike watched with narrowed eyes as the motorboat swung up to the main gangway and hooked on with its usual precision. His glance shifted to the nearest motor torpedo boat, the only one showing a sign of life, as a handful of the depot ship's maintenance parties scurried round, repairing and replacing the scars of a running battle 2 nights before, when the young first lieutenant had been killed, as so many had been from this flotilla. As usual, the replacement was arriving in the motorboat. Pike returned the salute of the slim officer who stepped over the gangway, his too new greatcoat gleaming with rain. "Sub-Lieutenant Clive Royce, come aboard to join," he shouted. They shook hands, and Pike ushered him to the first doorway, while two disgruntled members of the duty watch collected the baggage of the latest arrival. "Go below to the wardroom," said Pike. "The commander is in there at the moment, and he'll want to see you right away." Royce nodded and stepped into the passageway. Immediately the sounds of the storm were muffled, and a feeling of security surrounded him. He stripped off his greatcoat and cap, straightened his uniform, and had a quick glance in the mirror outside the old-fashioned door marked wardroom. He had a pleasant face, with eager grey eyes and a firm but generous mouth. His hair, now flattened by cap and rain, was dark almost to the point of being black. Taking a deep breath, Royce slid the door to one side and stepped in. The wardroom had once been the first-class saloon in the old ship's early days as a small passenger and cargo vessel, and had a prosperous, rather Edwardian look about it. The sides and deckhead were oak-panelled and carved in ornate designs, and a long polished bar completely lined one end. The whole room was littered with dumpy, red leather chairs and sofas, all well-worn but comfortable-looking, and most of them were occupied by youthful officers who lounged about reading magazines, listening to the radio, or just dozing. A round-faced, cheerful-looking commander leant against the bar listening to a serious lieutenant who kept pounding the bar as if to emphasise a point that was beyond anyone else's comprehension.